So I am here with Crystal. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us who you are?
Sure. So I am Crystal Carter. I am somebody who has, first of all, known Candy for forever and a day. I think you and I met in kindergarten. So that was approximately 100 years ago.
Yes.
And since then, who am I? What am I? So I am a wife. I am a cat mom. I'm a cat rescuer. I am a vegan foodie. I am a graphic designer. I'm somebody who likes to travel, and I'm a survivor.
So you've lived with panic disorder and depression for a large part of your life. When did this begin for you?
So that's a really interesting question. And I can sort of approach it of two minds. One is sort of with the gift of hindsight and being able to look back, it's kind of something that has been an influence in my life for as long as I can remember. But also in like a more specific way, there is kind of a time, there's a kind of a date, there's kind of a line in the sand where it started really becoming an issue in my life that was more in the forefront instead of just something that I was always wrestling with in the back of my mind. So for me, things kind of all came to a head in my last year of college. So February 2009, I started experiencing what I can only describe as like these periods of derealization, depersonalization. You know, I'd be working on some homework, listening to music, and I would just have this sensation kind of fall over me where I was just really not in my body. I was really not in my head, and I was feeling really disconnected. So that was kind of the first symptom that presented itself to me. And I thought it was kind of weird, but I didn't really think too much of it until the very specific date was actually February 28th, 2009. So after a few weeks of having these episodes and still just kind of doing what I needed to do, doing my homework, going to work, that kind of stuff. I was actually out for dinner with my husband, Trevor, and we were at our favorite Indian restaurant here in London, Ontario, and we were just sharing some conversation, sharing some food. And I had this sensation that I had never felt before kind of just wash over me. It can really only be described as the most intense, just visceral terror. Even though I was sitting at this table with my husband, who's somebody who is just so supportive and loving to me, was in great company, having a meal in a restaurant that I loved very much, I just became so afraid that I had the sensation that I needed to run and that I was in some sort of mortal danger. So my husband was obviously very concerned that I was feeling this way. So we packed up our food and we left and we went home and we were watching a movie and this sensation had never really left my body. And so I decided to go to bed early. And that entire night, it was just this cycle of, you know, every few minutes, this new wash of adrenaline over me. And I was stuck in this cycle of paralyzing fear. So needless to say, I didn't really get much sleep. And I woke up the next morning and I knew something was really wrong. So it was a Sunday morning, it was March 1st. And I took myself to a walk-in clinic. The doctor there, you know, heard my list of symptoms and basically just said, "You're experiencing panic attacks." And at the time, it was really hard to believe that because it felt so real and so big. And not to diminish panic attacks, but panic attacks just didn't seem to match up with just the severity, the intensity of what I was feeling. So, but that doctor was right. And over the next few weeks, I continued being caught in this cycle of panic and mounting panic. And just every day seemed to get worse until I came to a point where I was actually, I visited the emergency room a few times. I was convinced that I was having like heart failure, that something was going really, really wrong in a physical way, because I really wanted this to be solved or easily explained away as some sort of physical ailment. Because at the time, we're talking 2009 here, getting a mental health diagnosis was something that I just was not, I didn't have the time for. I was a student, I was a full-time employee, I didn't have the time for it. And I also just, I think, had a lot of like internalized stigma myself around mental illness. So it was really disheartening for me when, after all of these periods of going to the emergency room, I saw another doctor who diagnosed me with panic disorder. So then it became very real. And from that point on, I had to start on a journey of healing and treatment. You know, it's how many years later now? 13, 14 years later. And actually, I'm still on that path to this day.
You are a big advocate for talk therapy. What led you to seek that kind of help?
So for me, it's funny. I almost don't perceive it to be a choice. I was in such a dire state with my mental health around the time that I started talk therapy and specifically cognitive behavioral therapy, so CBT, that it really just felt, how can I describe it? It's more like a life or death type of situation. To choose life, it just really didn't feel like much of a choice. It was just, this is what I have to do to continue living. Because I knew that with the amount of intense pain I was in from panic disorder, I knew I had to make a choice and I had to seek help. So talk therapy was something that I started fairly early on in my journey with mental health issues, and it's something that I continue to do to this day. You know, I sort of often say to people that I don't think that there's a person I've met really that wouldn't benefit from talk therapy to some degree. I mean, it's a spectrum. We all have trauma and we all have pain to some degree. Some of us, you know, maybe more than others, but I don't think that there's a person that wouldn't benefit from sort of the objective professional perspective of talking to a mental health professional. So it's something that I try to be really open about. And the reason I do that is because I think that talking about it kind of destigmatizes it and sort of makes it something that's a little bit less taboo. Just a personal goal of mine is I want to help other people feel that if they're struggling, they can reach out for support and it doesn't have to be something that's embarrassing. So I do try to talk about it quite often.
So, besides talk therapy, what are the other things that you do in order to manage your panic disorder?
In addition to being a big advocate for getting into therapy, you know, therapy is great for everybody. I also firmly believe in better living through chemistry. You know, I can't make my own serotonin, so store-bought is fine. So again, just trying to destigmatize the idea that pharmaceutical interventions for mental health disorders is somehow shameful. I like to think of it in terms of if somebody had diabetes and they required insulin to help manage that diabetes, that's something that we wouldn't think twice about. You know, you wouldn't shame somebody for taking their insulin shot. So for me, I've come to realize that, you know, mental health issues are multifold. They come about in, you know, multiple different ways. But a lot of us folks who have mental health issues, it is chemical. You know, there is a chemical component to it, and I just don't feel that there's anything shameful about trying to supplement something that my brain doesn't make very well on its own with store-bought. Works for me.
I think it's amazing that you are also an advocate for yourself and you do the things that you need to do to live a happy and fulfilling life.
You really do, unfortunately, you really do have to advocate for yourself because, you know, our healthcare system in Canada is great. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's great. It's so wonderful that you don't have to feel like you're going to go into debt for something you can't control. But at the same time, there's so many folks in the system and it's really easy to get overlooked. And that's just because our doctors are so understaffed and spread so thin. So it's easy to get overlooked. It's easy to get turned away. It's easy to be told that you can come back later when things are worse. So you do really have to advocate for yourself and to be your own cheerleader. And it's like, you know, kind of be your own squeaky wheel. Like just squeak, 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 and like be that squeaky wheel that gets the grease because otherwise, no one's really going to do it for you.
So when you look back now, do you recall times where panic disorder was in your life and you just didn't know?
100%. So it's funny, again, talking about how hindsight is 2020. I always thought it was kind of normal that I look back on my childhood and I was like an insomniac as a child. I would never sleep. I would be up every night worried about everything from the state of the world to what was happening with my parents and my friends and at school and everything. I felt like as a child, I carried the weight of the world on my shoulders. And it's funny, I only have my own lived experience. So growing up, I never thought that was weird. I thought that was what everybody did. But now looking back, and you know, I don't have kids of my own, but having friends with kids, and I realize that's not particularly normal behavior for children to be so worried and anxious and preoccupied and up all night, panicked. So it's funny that now I look back and with all of the learning I've gotten in all of my years of therapy, I look back and realize that I was a very anxious child. I was a child that had depression. I was a child that had a lot of issues and very little support. But just because I only had my own lived experience, I never really knew that that was weird or dysfunctional until much later in life. So I'll also say that fairly recently in my life, like really over the last few years, I've started integrating cannabis as medicine into my life. And it's something that I've really only started doing since there's been a legal market in Canada. You know, honestly, just because frankly, I'm not cool enough to know anybody who sells weed. So for me, having the legal market in Canada has been really great for me because it helps me understand what I'm consuming, the dose that I'm consuming, the strain that I'm consuming, and I'm able to tailor an experience to how I'm feeling at that moment. So for me, using CBD was kind of my gateway. I started with, you know, a fairly high percentage CBD oil, and I was experimenting with that. And I have to say, I went into experimenting with cannabis as medicine for mental health issues with healthy skepticism. I didn't think it was going to work. And I think there was some part of me that didn't even want it to work. I just thought, this is stupid. There's no way that weed, that cannabis is going to work for me. Like, I'm beyond like any help that this plant can provide. So when I started taking my CBD tincture, taking it begrudgingly every day, putting it under my tongue, whatever, and I was just doing that, I was in the ritual of it. And weeks went by, and then I sort of reflected back when I finished my tincture and reflecting on it and going, did this do anything for me? And I'm going, when was the last panic attack I had? That's weird. I can't even remember, which is so unlike me. Normally it's like, oh, Tuesday. I thought maybe there was a nugget of something there. So, you know, still with much trepidation, I kind of started exploring some other products, some low THC products, things that are sort of advertised as indica, you know, which is supposed to be more of like a soothing feeling rather than kind of like that really upbeat high feeling. And I just have to say that even though I sort of entered this space with like a real healthy dose of skepticism, I was just blown away by how much it supported my wellness and my health and my well-being. And I think that cannabis has made me a better person in so many ways that it feels immeasurable. So to me, it's something that, you know, I've got my therapy, I've got my pharmacological sort of interventions, traditional SSRIs, which I think there's a huge important role in those. But I've also got my cannabis. And that to me is something that I enjoy recreationally, but it's also something that I take very seriously and sacredly as a medicine for me.
So body positivity is something that you promote in your life. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I sort of came by it honestly through being interested in like punk music and Riot Girl and feminism and, you know, all of that kind of stuff that I discovered in my, you know, teen years. Body positivity sort of like extended naturally out of that, of this idea of just challenging, you know, sort of like typical beauty standards. And it's something that it's wonderful because one of the benefits of social media that I found is there's a lot of really great content creators that are creating wonderful content around this concept of body positivity and all bodies are a good body and health at every size, finding you know, what works for you in terms of your health at whatever stage in your journey you're at. And for me, it's just been this sort of like life affirming thing to realize that the advertising that we were all subjected to growing up, especially in God, like the 80s and 90s, especially now that I work as a graphic designer and, you know, somebody who works in marketing, and you sort of come to realize that the insecurity that they want you to feel is because they do want you to buy something. And once you kind of like peek behind the curtain, so to speak, and realize what is actually happening, and it really is sort of this cycle of purchase intent, you can sort of get past it and realize that, hey, maybe the body I'm in is just fine, just as it is. And just because whatever Vogue thinks that it's not, maybe they're not the authority on what my body is and how it should be. So it's been really great. And like I said, life affirming for me to sort of really lean into body positivity throughout my 20s and 30s. And especially now as I'm approaching 40, I think I'm more comfortable in my body now than I ever was before. And that includes even growing up. I mean, gosh, we were all so young and thinking that we needed to lose 5, 10, 15 pounds and going on diets, and to sort of get out of that cycle is just incredibly liberating. And I really wish for that for everyone. It's wonderful.
And I mean, you've always been super artistic and talented and all the things, but
thank you.
You have a lot of tattoos, and they're all beautiful, and I'm sure thank they you. All have a story, and I was wondering if yeah. you'd like to talk about them.
Sure. Yeah, you're right. I am a very heavily tattooed person. I know you can't see the rest of me, but I'm pretty much covered everywhere. I've been working on my legs the last few years as well, so I'm kind of a walking canvas at this point. And, you know, for me, it almost, in a way, ties into body positivity. It's sort of my reclaiming of myself and saying, this is my body. This is my sovereign land. This is what I own. And it gets to be how I want it to be. So for me, tattooing is a way to like reclaim that back and to, you know, kind of decorate myself with beautiful pictures. You know, some of my tattoos are just full of meaning. Some of them, I got to be honest with you, are like bro tats that I got just because it was fun, which in a way, it's almost like those last pages of the yearbook where you've got people writing on them and wishing you well. So for me, it's really cool because my body has become sort of this canvas of moments in my life that are core memories, of pivotal moments. I can look back on certain tattoos and be reminded of certain trips that I took. And it's really cool to be able to have pieces of trips and people and memories that I can reflect on in a physical way. But for me, it is really just a reclaiming of the sovereignty of myself and saying, I get to decorate this body because it's mine.
I love that. Have you ever drawn your own tattoos?
I have never. I work with a few really awesome artists who do a lot of my work. They're, you know, I kind of defer to their expertise. These are people who are like lifelong illustrators and people who are just fantastic at their craft. So I kind of defer to them on the actual drawing. You know, I kind of go with them with the idea. But sometimes, you know, it's more a vibe. And I go in and say, hey, I love that piece of flash. And flash is what you refer to art that's already kind of been pre-drawn, not necessarily for you specifically. And sometimes I'm just vibing with a piece of flash that somebody's already drawn up. And I'm like, I want that on my leg. So it's funny, I'm actually taking my first trip next week since COVID. My husband and I are going to go to San Francisco. And I'm definitely planning on hitting up some shops in San Francisco and going in and going, I want that flash on my leg. And then that'll be my little way to remember San Francisco.
So I wanted to ask you, what brings you joy?
I love this question. Well, my cats, first of all. I am a cat lady. I know you are a cat lady as well. We love our critters. So I've got my 3 cat babies. They bring me a lot of joy. So I work from home and it's really great because I got to kind of see them more than I did kind of in like the pre-pandemic world where I was, you know, at my office every day, day in, day out. So I think for me, I've just had a lot of bonding with them over the last couple of years, which has brought me a lot of joy. My husband as well. I've been married for 14 years, something like that. We've been together for 21 years this year. He's my person. I feel really lucky to have been with somebody since I was, you know, so young. We met when I was 17. So definitely him. You know, some good vegan food is also never a problem with me. Love a nice meal and just spending time in nature. It's been great now that it's like nicer outside over the last couple of weeks. My husband and I have really just been taking full advantage of the nice weather, and we've been going out for hikes and just trying to spend as much time outside as possible because it kind of grounds you. It definitely makes me feel more whole and more joyful.
So what books are you currently reading?
Oh, so this is kind of a funny one because I realized that the two books I'm reading are like polar opposites of one another. So the first book that I'm reading, working through right now, is The Four City Killer by Vanessa Brown. I'm unashamed of my love of true crime. I think it's so fascinating. And a weird bit of trivia is that London, Ontario is actually the serial killer capital of Canada by per capita. We have had more serial killers than anywhere else. And this local author, she actually owns this amazing used bookstore as well, called Brown and Dixon on Richmond Street here in London. She wrote this amazing book called The Four City Killer, which is all about this whole bunch of disappearances and killings that actually happened here in London, Ontario, which is so bizarre and definitely not anything I knew about growing up. So it's been a fascinating read. And then, of course, because I'm like a dichotomous person, yin and yang, the other book I'm reading is Pieces Every Step by Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Buddhist master who actually passed away earlier this year. I've had this book for a really long time, and I've just kind of been revisiting it just in light of his passing. And it's a really great book because it's just a lot of practical everyday steps on how to like enhance your mindfulness in like everyday tasks. He has like these beautiful meditations on being mindful while you're washing your dishes or being mindful while you're having a bite of food. And it's just a really beautiful sort of musing on life. And he's a master of thought. So yeah, lots of gore and then like beautiful mindfulness. So that's me. Yeah.
And what music are you listening to this week?
What have I been putting on repeat this week? So I recently discovered this artist, rapper, but she also does like kind of these like mindful meditation tracks. Her name's Queen Herbie. And I found her on Instagram and she just has this really great energy. And she has like a lot of songs that are just like about self-care and empowering yourself and, you know, body positivity and a lot of these themes that we just touched on, themes that are really important in my own life. So I've been listening to a lot of her. Also Lizzo's new track About Damn Time, because Lizzo is a queen. I've been listening to her, that song on repeat constantly. I've just been doing a lot of playlists. So I would say Apple Music's jazz funk playlist is always a good time. That's basically on repeat in our house all the time, but definitely this week. It's just like good, funky, feel good vibes.
I really appreciate you being here today. I love seeing your face. You know, we've known each other for so long and we've been so close for so long, you know, so it's really a treat for me that you're here. I think it's beautiful and inspirational, the work that you've obviously done to get where you are today.
Thank you so much, Candy. I really appreciate you saying that. It's definitely been a lot of work in my life. I've had to do a lot of things on my own to get where I am. But I feel like, you know, at this point, I'm on the other side of a lot of hard things and I can just focus on the positive. So
I love that. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I love you so much.
I love you too.